Al Horford, two for two, and a steal.
Now, it's time to talk Celtics.
Celtics come roaring out of the gate.
This is the Sports Hub Celtics Show with Gasper and Murray. 98.5, the Sports Hub. Game on lock for sure.
47 years ago, the Milwaukee Bucks started 7-0, and they came to Boston and suffered their first loss of the year. Turn the calendar to 2018, and their history will repeat. On a night, the Celtics make history. 24 threes, shattering the franchise record. 33 points for Giannis Antetokounmpo. Not enough as the Celtics survive an early season classic, and they win their fourth consecutive game. The final score, Boston 117, Milwaukee 113. There are no undefeated teams left in the NBA.
Obviously, since the second half of the OKC game, we've played pretty good offensively. We've gotten good shots. We've generated good ones. Tonight, we didn't settle as much. We still have some possessions we'd like to have back, but, you know, I thought that we took what the defense gave us. We got to the second side of the floor, and we, you know, found open shooters.
Hey, it's starting to look good. Welcome into the Sports Hub Celtics Show for this week. Jim Murray, Chris Gasper, and you at 617-779-0985. Also hanging with us, producing today's show, the multi-talented Brian Rubb, Boston Sports Journal. So we'll be using his expertise as he covers the Celtics for BSJ as well. So the Celtics set the team record in three-pointers. They beat the Milwaukee Bucks 117-113, the last game that they played on Thursday night at the Garden. I think it's fair to call that a statement game, considering that the Bucks, to me, have looked like an improved team. They now have a real coach, and Mike Budenholzer is certainly preaching the pace and space that he had with the Atlanta Hawks, and anyone that paid attention to that team when he was the head coach there saw how much better they were under his tutelage. And they were the only unbeaten team left in the NBA. So I thought it was a statement game for them. I thought it was a good win on Thursday.
Yeah, I mean, if we're going to say that the Raptors win over the Celtics in Toronto was a statement win for the Raptors, then you have to say this was a statement win for the Celtics.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm totally down with that. I would agree with that. And I think it was also sort of a statement win for the Celtics offensively, because the Bucks came in as, you know, one of the better defensive teams in the league. And to go out there and slap 117 on them when you've been struggling a little bit offensively, obviously they're starting to come out of it, particularly Kyrie Irving the last two games. But I think it was a statement about the offensive capability of the Celtics and that they're getting closer to it as long as you don't have Jaylen Brown and Gordon Hayward on the floor at the same time.
Yeah, and so this is where I really wanted to start, too, because I know, you know, you talked about this last week, and I think it sounded like heresy to some that Gordon Hayward should be on the second unit right now. Now, it's funny, Jaylen Brown doesn't play in this game on Thursday night because he's dealing with this foot issue. And how about that? Gordon Hayward has his best game as a Celtic, and I thought he popped in the limited minutes that he had, 18 points, 6 for 11, 5 assists, but he just, to me, just because I was there and I had pretty decent seats that night, and he just looks smooth. You know, for any of the highlights that I saw of Gordon Hayward when he was with the Utah Jazz, that's what it looked like on Thursday night in limited minutes. And you think that there is something there because Jaylen Brown wasn't playing.
Yeah, I just think you look at it this year, I can't think of a game, and maybe B-Rob can, where those two guys have both had it going in the same game. I mean, it just doesn't seem to work for whatever reason. And I think you put, you know, Semi Ojeleye started the game, and he actually made a couple of threes, which was good. But he's a player that doesn't really require the ball. And when you put five guys out there who sort of require the ball to some degree, like even Al, you know, Al's not a guy that's going to demand the ball. But when Al's at his best, I think he's getting the ball high post and hitting cutters and facilitating. So even some of the best things that Al is capable of doing on the court require him to have the ball, even though they're not scoring, even though he's not a shot hog type of player. He still sort of needs the ball to be able to impact the game to some degree offensively. When you put somebody else out there who really doesn't need to get the touches, doesn't need, can just sort of stand in the corner and shoot this if you're open, that's it. I think it makes the spacing better. I think the offense flows better. I think guys aren't stepping on each other's toes. And so when I said I thought Hayward, you know, and this, and Maz looked at me funny when I said this yesterday too. The reason I say Hayward to the bench is because I think he'd help the second unit more because he's such a good ball handler. I think, and then Rozier could play sort of off the ball. You know, it's not a knock on Hayward as much as it's saying this is the guy that would help this unit the most based on what he can do the best. And Brad's even said it, you know, they feel like they have to get Hayward pick and roll touches. Well, that's a little hard when you're out there with Kyrie and Jason Tatum and Horford and Jaylen Brown to just say like, oh, we're going to get Hayward these pick and roll touches. I think it's a little easier with a second unit. I think he'd be a better fit there, and maybe you get more out of Jalen. But either way, I don't care how you do it at this point. I just think they're at a point where, at this point in the year, let's change that starting lineup and put Jalen Brown or Hayward coming off the bench.
Yeah, I mean, I'm with you in terms of how it would look and how the offense would run to have Hayward on that second unit. But as you mentioned yesterday, too, it's just not going to happen.
No, it's not. I know that. Yeah, ego, paycheck, relationship with Brad.
Marquee free agent. Yeah, the optics alone. It's just period, point blank. That's it. That's why Gordon Hayward's not going to go to the second unit. So, okay, it goes to Jalen Brown to do that. How's he going to accept that role?
You know, look, I don't know. I think if you're the Celtics, Jalen Brown's such a smart guy. If you're Danny Ainge or Brad Stevens, you try and come to Jalen Brown and you sell him on the history of the sixth man with the Boston Celtics. You know, going all the way back to somebody like John Havlicek. It's obviously a role that Kevin McHale was in. You try and sell him on that and the idea that it's not about who starts the games, it's about who finishes the games and how important that role can be. And if you want to make it more contemporary, you know, I think you mentioned somebody like Andre Iguodala and what he means to the Warriors. And hopefully Jalen Brown understands that and accepts that. I think he's a really smart guy, and I think if you can appeal to him in that regard. And by the way, do you think this is like the first time Jalen Brown's looked at the situation and said, maybe I could end up on the bench based on what's on our
team? Oh, I'm sure not. No.
These guys know what's up. I mean, they know what the situation is with Hayward coming back.
The other thing, obviously, to take away from this game, the Celtics setting the team record in threes. They attempt 55 of them. Literally everyone hit a three except for Marcus Smart, hilariously enough, on three attempts. Love him. Love what he brings to the game. I'm glad that he's back here. But, boy, it is just so fitting that he was the only guy that really couldn't hit one. While Aaron Baines is out there hitting wing threes now. The direction of the game, is it too much?
Yeah, probably. I mean, I don't mind it as much as I think other people do. But there is still, and look, anytime you do something repetitively, there's a certain, you know, ennui that can sort of set in there when you look at it. It can become monotonous. And so when guys are just jacking up threes, and my only concern with the Celtics, because they are one of the better coach teams in the league, is just what I saw a little bit in the fourth quarter there, that possession where they got two offensive rebounds, and there was a particularly quick three by Gordon Hayward. And I get it. You know, you hit that, and everybody says it's the dagger, great shot, Gordon. And you miss it, and it looks bad. But I also just thought situational basketball at that point, the points are not as important as taking the possession and the time off the clock.
Those are the ones that bother me the most. You know, yesterday I'm sure I came off as old man yelling at the cloud because I don't like the direction of this. And look, the Celtics have the shooters to do it, like Golden State. And I got schooled by Felger, and I think rightfully so, because I've blamed Steph Curry and the Warriors for this when it really comes down to the nerds. It's the nerds that want to make more of a case for the three.
What's the Rockets?
The three more important than the two. And yeah, Daryl Morey there,
Daryl
right?
Daryl Morey, yeah.
So what really bothers me the most is, though, okay, you want to set a three, you want to have some ball movement, fine, I can live with that. That's the way the game is now. When you take 2 seconds off the shot clock, you're just at the top of the key and you're chucking, like, that's what makes me crazy. That's what you saw in a lot of Game 7 in the Eastern Conference Finals last year. Like, you're just chucking to chuck. Like, that.
Yeah.
It's. I find that nauseating.
Well, what's annoying for me is that I think, again, you can look at the Celtics and the Rockets last year in the Conference Finals. Both those teams, hard three-point shooting performances. And again, it goes back to situational basketball. You have to recognize on a given night, okay, we're not shooting well from three. Let's do something else. Because I don't care what the, you know, I'm not very good at math. I never have been. But I know that two is better than zero. And so if you're missing a lot, if you're not making any threes, you know, two's not as good as three, but it's definitely better than zero. And so take some of the two-point shots that you can make on a given night when the three's not falling. That's the frustration for me. Like, when I look at the NBA, off the top of my head, and there's probably another team that I'm not thinking of, but the only team that I feel like should shoot till they drop because eventually they'll make them is the Warriors. Everybody else, if you're in a situation where they're not falling on a given night and you get midway through the fourth quarter and they're not falling, then you can't just act like it's the first 5 minutes of the first quarter and just keep jacking them up.
Yeah, and again, I know the Celtics, for the most part, have the shooters to be able to pull this off. But
do they, though?
Well, on a night-to-night basis. Well, this is the thing. I don't know how sustainable
I don't think their shooting's as good as we think. I don't, and that's what I thought earlier in the year. You know, they have guys who are good shooters but not necessarily pure shooters. Like, it makes a difference if Tatum's hitting the three, if Jalen Brown's hitting the three. You know, Hayward's been a good three-point shooter, but he's not Klay Thompson or Steph Curry or Durant. He's not that type of shooter.
Well, even in the, you know, look, even in the games against the Pistons, especially the second one at home earlier in the week, there's lulls there offensively in the fourth. They miss a lot of open shots, Brown being one of the main culprits there. So, Yeah, I mean, I'm not going to put them on the level of the Warriors. I can see why Brad and this team want to keep trying to do it. It's just, how sustainable is it? And the other thing, too, is, like, it just gets ugly, too, when you see guys getting lazy, jacking up threes because, ooh, it's, you know, less abuse on their body. Like, I'm not a fan of it. 55 threes, and that's going to get smashed. Like, they're, you know.
Oh, totally.
This is we're only a couple of weeks into the league year. You know, that's going to get smashed between now and the end of the season. Okay, we'll get to your calls here. Got a couple of open lines. You want to join us here on the Sports Hub Celtics Show, 617-779-0985. We'll also get B-Rob's thoughts on the Celtics and how they look and what they should do with Gordon Hayward and Jaylen Brown with a redundancy there at the wing. We'll do that next here on the Sports Hub Celtics Show, 98.5 of Sports Hub.
This is the Sports Hub Celtics Show on the home of the seas, 98.5 the Sports Hub. Dedicated to your Celtics, Chris Gasper, Jim Murray, the Sports Hub Celtics Show on 98.5 the Sports Hub.
Kyrie instead, straightaway three, splash. Back-to-back threes for Kyrie Irving.
Get him up. Get them up. They're wide open. They're going to play defense like that, then I don't see why not. Al's a capable shooter. I have utmost confidence in him. And then, you know, if we don't have it, then we have secondary action as well that we can run. But I feel like, you know, if they're going to play that type of defense, then we should shoot it every time, you know. So, you know, at one point, I think Brooke and John Henson were in the paint. So, you know, let's get them up. I hope we shoot 80 next game. They play defense like that.
Can't believe that they had 55 attempts and they want to keep chucking. Kyrie Irving after the Celtics' record for three-pointers in their win over the Bucks on Thursday night. Again, 117-113 was the final. Sports Hub Celtics Show, 98.5 the Sports Hub. How sustainable is this, not just for the Celtics, but for the league, to answer that question? We bring in Brian Robb, who covers the Celtics for BostonSportsJournal.com. Is this just what the league is now, B-Rob?
I think this is just, honestly, a matchup situation, Jim, more than anything else, because you look at that Bucks team. It's just a lot of slow bigs and Brooke Lopez, John Henson, Ilyasova. So they were clearly just staying back. I think they were challenging the Celtics. Hey, you guys have, you know, stunk it up shooting a three all year long. Like, we're going to give you this shot because we don't want to be exposed in other ways. And the C's made them pay for it. And, you know, that's, I think this is the best thing the Celtics have going in that theoretical matchup, because the Bucks have no way to guard Al Horford with the guys they have.
Yeah, I mean, that's a good point. And also, it seems like Budenholzer's system just sort of, he still sort of seems to have a system that prioritizes, you know, defending the paint and not letting guys penetrate versus sort of defending the three.
Exactly. And that's something where, you know, Budenholzer's he's an upgrade for them. No question about it, from Jason Kidd and, you know, Joe Prunty or whatever. But, you know, his Hawks teams defensively, you know, they'd always kind of fall apart in the postseason, obviously against LeBron, which, you know, is, you know, a point to how good LeBron is more than what the Hawks were at that point, but it's a situation there where they need to upgrade their personnel in that realm to, you know, guard a guy like Horford and or just change their scheme overall, because if they keep doing that, you know, a seven-game series, it's not going to go well for them.
All right, your Hawks broke your heart many times there, right?
Jim saw it firsthand.
Let's not relive that, and how the program director there in Atlanta would do everything except beat us with a cane to refer to the teams locally as our. Oh, God. Every night I'd come home and look in the mirror and just want to... just filled with so much hate and self-loathing.
You had to take those warm showers just scrubbing away.
They're not our Hawks. They're not our Falcons. And they're not our Braves. Oh, thank God I got out of there. All right, so B-Rob, 5 assists for Gordon Hayward the other night. He looks the best he's looked in a Celtics uniform thus far. I don't think it was just about him, you know, working out the kinks here in terms of his health and coming back from the ankle injury. It's because Jaylen Brown wasn't there. There's obviously redundancy, it feels like, at the wing. What do you make of what Gasper said? Maybe having Gordon Hayward go to the second unit or Brown? Feels like something has to give there.
Yeah, it's really interesting. I actually wrote a lot about this even before the season started, because just I talked to some members of the Celtics organization there, like, you know, just talking about that starting five and being like, hey, one of them suggested to me, you know, if I was one of those guys in that unit, I might want to come off the bench anyway because I'm going to get more opportunities. Whereas, obviously, there's, you know, too many mouths to feed with the starting five right now. And I think we saw on Thursday night, just, again, when you have, you guys talked about it, just having a guy who stays out of the way, knows your leg, can hit a three, but can do the dirty work. But then, you know, you get the ball in the hands of Hayward more, Irving more, you know, less, you know, for as good as Tatum and Brown are, they're mostly isolation guys. They're not creating for other people. And to be honest, like, they had a huge role last year, but I don't think they've fully come to terms with the fact that this team is better with them in secondary roles in the starting five. And I think Brad Stevens will kind of go through the motions with that group more to figure out if those guys can get there in the next month, because that is where the team is at its ceiling, obviously, with those five guys on the floor together. But if not, and offensively, that starting five group is actually performing below where the team is, which it has been to this point.
Yes, it definitely has.
So if that keeps up for another month, you know, I think he's going to give it, you know, how long do you give it? Like a month, 2 months? You know, you give it a while, but if there's going to be a breaking point, and then, you know, I don't think Hayward goes there just because of the ego factor, as you guys talked about, even though that does make sense. I thought Jaylen Brown might be the guy you need to keep in there for defensive purposes, but, you know, he hasn't been great on that side of the floor either. So that would be a very interesting, you know, Tatum or Brown, who goes to the bench if you decide to break up that unit. I mean, that's a conversation that's probably not going to, you know, happen for a month or two if things keep going like this. But, you know, Brown would be the guy that makes the most sense.
Yeah. Here's my thing on that. When I look at it, I guess if you're Brad, and he certainly knows way more about basketball than I will ever know, what's more important to you? Getting guys going individually and then putting them back together, or trying to get this unit to get to go, you know, to work together together right now, I guess, is what I'm trying to say. You know, because I think you could take Jaylen Brown out of the starting five, put him on the second unit, get some of his confidence back, and then later in the year, put these guys back together, and it might work better at that point. You know, I think at this point, everybody's sort of trying to mark their territory. Everybody's trying to find their role. Everybody's trying to score. And the one thing I like, B-Rob, that I've seen the last couple of games, I thought in the beginning of the year, and again, we're only 8 games into it, but I thought Kyrie Irving was deferring too much and trying to be a facilitator too much and trying to make sure everybody was happy. In the last couple of games, I think he's just said, forget it, I'm just going to be me, and you guys play off me because I'm the best player on this team.
Right, and he's, you know, he's getting to his spots more. And he, I think it has been interesting to see him also just come to terms with the fact that, you know, some nights his job is just going to be to get into the paint and, like, get the attention and then do kickoff. Like, that game in Detroit the other night, I think he had, you know, 3 or 4 points before he really started getting going this week. But he was fine with that. He wasn't forcing stuff. And now he, you know, he's able to do both. He's, you know, when they need him to get going, he can do it. When they need him to set things up because he's drawn 3 or 4 guys, he can do that too. So, you know, the chemistry is starting to build there with him, with Hayward. Tatum's been up and down in the last couple week or so. Jaylen Brown obviously has had a rough start. Horford, I mean, when these guys start hitting threes, this might not even be a conversation anymore, because the offensive potential of this group, of that group, is so much higher than the rest of the team. But it's still something where, you know, are people going to adjust to their roles? And we're going to find out in the next month or so.
But in order for that to happen, and here's the point that I've made sort of consistently since we knew they were going to have everybody back. For it to work, somebody has to be in a position where they're willing to sacrifice part of their game, a la sort of Kevin Love in Cleveland,
sure.
B-Rob, where it's literally like, we know you can do a lot of other things, Gordon, or we know you can do a lot of other things, Jaylen, but we really need you to just stand in the corner and shoot open threes. And I don't know if somebody's willing to do that, and if there's a guy there who, you know, if let's say it's Jaylen, if he's a good enough three-point shooter, that makes sense, that you'll have efficiency with that unit, even if he's willing to accept that role.
Right. I mean, and that's the question right now. And that's a big part of why this team, I feel like, has started slow on the offensive end with that group. And is that a conversation that Brad Stevens has to have with one of them? Is that something that they're going to come to terms with on their own when, you know, just watching from the sidelines, seeing like how much better the offense looked the other night against the Bucks when, you know, a guy like Jaylen was off the floor just because, you know, things flowed better? And so I think they'll figure it out, but there is something to be said for, hey, maybe you know, like the Warriors, they don't start their best 5 players. Iguodala comes off the bench, right. And then he plays crunch time anyway.
Yep.
So is this a situation where, okay, we put someone in, you know, like, I mean, Marcus Smart obviously is not the shooting type for that, but kind of does the dirty work, or Semi Ojeleye, you know, have the more defensive-minded guy at the 2 spot to kind of protect Kyrie there, to keep their versatility, who can conceivably just hit open shots and stay out of the way. Is it eventually going that path? I don't know, but it's a conversation that it's going to be had, you know, a month down the line, I feel like, if the offense doesn't improve more.
All right, we got Brian Robb, who covers the Celtics for BostonSportsJournal.com. That's whose voice you just heard. He's hanging alongside as well. So if you want to talk to him, 617-779-0985, Sports Hub Celtics Show. Go to Joe in Quincy. What's up, Joe?
Hey, guys. Hey, I just wanted to kind of just go over the start for Kyrie Irving. I think as soon as Jalen Brown came out, and I'm not bashing on Jalen Brown at all. It's just there's only one basketball. I feel like as soon as he went out, it allowed Gordon Hayward to have the ball in his hands going to be more of a creator. And I think that's really where Kyrie survives, is kind of like playing off the ball like he did with LeBron. I just feel like when he gets the ball coming up from the baseline, he has more room, which means he can either shoot the open threes like he was last night or attack the basket and create for everybody else. I just think that having Kyrie play off the ball, having Gordon handle the ball more, will just make more space for everybody else. Love the show, guys. I'm going to get off the air. Thanks.
Thanks, Joe. So how much of that is what the caller was just saying, or how much is that maybe Kyrie is now getting some of the rust off from this knee injury as he's come back from that over the last few games? Because he's looked certainly more like Kyrie in these last couple of games.
Yeah, there's no question about it. And I think a lot of that is just getting the rust off. Like he was getting good shots before. They just weren't going down. And now he's, whether it's a confidence thing, whether it was just, you know, getting, you know, more acclimated to what his role was going to be within this starting five, getting used to the people around him, whether it was someone, again, the defensive matchups. But, you know, it was going to take time for him to get right after being off the floor for, you know, 4, 5, 6 months here. And so I wouldn't overreact too much being like, okay, he's thriving because Jalen was on the floor the other night. That's, you know, they clearly played well together plenty last year. So it's not like you can blame Brown for holding him back on that front.
Or maybe he's just not fat anymore, B-Rob. We're going to play the sound that quite vindicating. Earlier this week, we replayed some sound from Tommy Heinsohn of NBC Sports Boston, and then Kyrie Irving reacted to that after his game against Detroit at home earlier this week. So we'll get to that. And Kyrie, maybe he's just looking good these last couple of games because he's not fat anymore. Huh, who talked about that a couple of weeks ago on this very show? Me! All right, we'll take more of your calls here on the Sports Hub Celtics Show as well at 617-779-0985. Before that, though, we're going to get caught up with the Sports Hub headlines with Tim McCone.
Sports. Chris Gasper, Jim Murray. The Sports Hub Celtics Show on 98.5, the Sports Hub.
He is recovering from an injury. To me, he looks like he's 5 pounds overweight, but I haven't seen him on the scale.
Right, maybe that's something he plays his way into.
Yes,
you know,
that's
game
what
game.
I think
right.
is going to happen, and his timing, and he's just like a half a step slow.
And I caught wind of it, you know, probably like a week ago, and it was bothering me because it was the most honest thing that anyone had said about the way I was playing, because I literally had to, you know, try to match a level that I had been playing at last year, but also become better. So how do you do that is, you know, I had to really put an emphasis on my body and how I was taking care of my mind. But, you know, that was one of the realest things that I could have heard. And as a competitor, you know, if that doesn't irk you, you know, itch inside of you of you wanting to be better, especially when a guy, you know, Tommy Heinsohn, you can't do any wrong in his eyes if you're a Celtic.
Sports Hub Celtic Show 98.5, a Sports Hub. So this was from really earlier in the week. Tommy Heinsohn basically calling Kyrie Irving fat. I know it's a bit much, using some Felger and Maz liberties there, but, you know, 5 pounds overweight. And I said this very thing on the Sports Hub Celtic Show a couple of weeks back, and I know you kind of raised your eyebrow when I said it there, Gasper.
Yeah, I did.
He looked a little doughy. Just didn't look like himself, and I get it. He's
I
coming back
from
the injury.
I thought it was just the afro. You know, the afro added, you know, camera adds 10 pounds. I thought the afro maybe added 5
from
pounds.
An aesthetic standpoint, too, and the lovely Jasmine, we've been watching some of these games. She's like, I don't like the afro. He's like, it doesn't look like him, and it didn't look like him. So maybe it was just he got the haircut, and he looked more like Kyrie, because he did. He was a little
more aerodynamic.
I mean, he looked amazing, and he looks like he shrugged off some of these early season struggles. But to me, I'm telling you, he looked a half step slow, and he looked a little doughy. I'm an a-hole to say it, but Tommy Heinsohn says it, and all of a sudden, well. Who can doubt Tommy?
Well, that's true. You can't doubt Tommy. You know, he's a Hall of Famer. But I think the interesting thing there is we're sort of, you know, the way I think both the things could be true, but maybe the one I want to focus on is the half step slow. Coming off the knee surgery, it would make sense for him to
A
half step slow.
Yeah, you had
know,
to expect
working your
that
way into. I mean, that makes sense. The overweight thing, I don't know. I mean, he didn't deny it. He seemed to give credence to it there. He said it's the most real thing anybody said, but so and I heard he was like getting on the treadmill. So maybe there's some truth to that. But being a half step slow after you had a procedure on your knee, that makes a lot of sense to me, and it doesn't mean you're out of shape.
Yeah, I tell you though, I still now as a big Jim Warrior, of course. Like now I watch him, and there was it the game against Detroit? Yeah, or the end. Yeah, no, it was the game against Detroit where at the end, because Ish Smith basically shoots them back into it, and there's that turnover with about, you know, a half second left, and Kyrie comes in from the left side of your screen and slides across the floor, and his knee kind of went an odd way. I was just like, now when I watch him, I'm like, ah, you know, I'm just like terrified of him re-injuring that knee, you know. Let's go to Steve in Medford. You're next up here on the Sports Hub Celtic Show. Hey, Steve.
Hey, guys. I went to the Bucks and Celtics game the other day, and I think at the beginning of the year, I think we would all agree that the top three teams in the Eastern Conference were the Celtics, the Raptors, and the 76ers. But watching the Bucks live, I mean, they really impressed me. I mean, they were 7-0, obviously, going into the game. And I got to say, Giannis is an unguardable monster. I mean, I think the Celtics threw four different defenders on him, and no one could stop him. So my question is, how serious do we take the Bucks, and are they a legit contender in the Eastern Conference?
So I thought, not to cut you off, but no, I thought that they were a legit threat before the season started, only because if you had watched, again, Mike Budenholzer and the job he did with the Atlanta Hawks before he got blown out of there, it was impressive. And it's more, you know, it's more about pace and space. Giannis has already taken more threes in eight games or whatever it is than he has in his career. He's incredible, you know, he's an incredible talent. And now they have real shooters there, too, and a guy like Arian Ilyasova. They have another big in Lopez. Like, I think they're a real threat. Not as much as the Raptors, who I didn't take seriously because I didn't know what kind of Kawhi Leonard we were going to get, but he looks like, you know, finals MVP Kawhi.
Yep, he does.
But I think the Bucks showed you Thursday, too, and there's more fight there. They got a real coach. It's not Jason Kidd running the show anymore. I think they're a real threat.
No, I do too, and I've been impressed with them and their start. I like Dante DiVincenzo, the rookie coming off the bench. I think he gives them a little more depth, and he's a guy that's not afraid to shoot the basketball as well. They took you to seven games last year. Now, look, you didn't have Gordon Hayward and Kyrie Irving. We all know that, but still, you know, they took you to seven games. Chris Middleton is a guy that seems to play really well against the Celtics. They're legit. You know, when I look at the 76ers, I know they played better of late, but I still have some concerns just sort of about Ben Simmons and Markelle Fultz together. What's the shooting situation there? Are they willing to even attempt the shots? It seems like, I mean, to me, I had this thought the other day. To me, Simmons is a giant Rajon Rondo. He's 6'10 Rondo, which is a pretty amazing player, but it's a guy, he's just not going to shoot. I mean, he will not take some of these jump shots and three-point shots. And in today's NBA, that's a real detriment. I mean, even if you don't make them, I mean, look at Aaron Baines, a guy like that, right? Mm-hmm. You know, even if you don't make them, as long as you take them, at least teams have to honor it. With the 76ers, you don't have to honor that. And I don't know how they can beat some of these other teams in the East just trading two for three.
I also think the 76ers have an inherent softness in them. And Ben Simmons, yeah, like Rondo, too. He certainly has that bitchiness streak in him, too. Like, I like the player, but sometimes
he steps
over the edge. You saw it in that last game that they played against each other, too, where, you know, he pushes Jason Tatum into the bench. So he doesn't get called for a foul there. Like, there's just something off with that team. I can't take them seriously. To me, it's the Raptors and the Bucks in the East. And maybe this team they're seeing tonight in Indiana. We'll touch on that a little bit. But I want to go to Paul in Somerville. You're next here on the Sports Hub Celtic Show. Hello.
Yeah, guys, I wanted to bring up what Danny Ainge said on the broadcast about playing through their best players. To me, it's not about who starts and who comes off the bench. It's about deferring to the best ball handler and creator on the floor. When Irving and Hayward have the ball, other guys get involved. They want to involve other guys. So it's on the coach, Brad, to reiterate to both Tatum and Brown that if they let Hayward and Irving and Simpson Horford run the show, they're going to get better looks than just dribbling the ball into a crowd and shooting a contested jump shot, which is what's been happening all the first week of the season and bogs down the offense.
Yeah, but I don't know. Don't you consider Tatum one of their best players, too, on certain matchups, like on certain nights? Shouldn't the offense also be running
See, I think
him?
That's the problem, too, is like, yeah, on you know, if you look at it just sort of based on reputation, then, yeah, Hayward's one of your best players, and he should get all these pick-and-roll touches, but he's not back yet. And if I'm Jason Tatum, I'm sort of looking at it and saying, some of those touches should go to me. Let me do my thing. I can score. I can help. I can help. Not a selfish way of looking at it, but just like, I can help. I can help. You know, look at what I did in the playoffs last year. And I think this is the difficult balancing act. And this is why, again, I said before, and I know it's not going to happen. I'm not an idiot. Why I think it would help if Hayward went to the bench, because I think it's easier for him to get those touches. It's easier for him to get back to being the real Gordon Hayward. And then you can sort of reinsert him there. I think here in the starting lineup, it's kind of this balancing act that they're doing. And it worked against Milwaukee when you subtracted one guy, you know, Jaylen Brown. And so that's the whole thing for me, is you have to subtract somebody from that starting lineup to help Gordon Hayward get back to being Gordon Hayward. And without doing it in a way where he's maybe sort of stepping on the toes of other guys who are ready to go right now. They're not trying to get back to anything.
Derek and Holliston, your thoughts on the Celtics starting five right now. Go ahead.
Hey, what's up, guys?
Hey.
I was thinking Jaylen Brown. I think Brad Stevens is going to send Jaylen Brown to the bench in like about a month. I think Marcus Morris will fits better in the lineup, and it gives a lot more opportunities for Tatum, obviously, to get his shots. But more, I'm saying Jaylen Brown. He can't sit in the corner shooting threes like you guys are saying. That's not his game. He drives to the hoop. He's athletic. I think put him in that second role, and he'll be the same player. Like we all saw Jaylen Brown last year in the playoffs.
Well, I'm sorry to let you go on that, Derek. Well, considering how outspoken he was at times last year, I know Marcus Morris would certainly like to be in that starting five. Jake in the car, as we were just talking about the Bucks and Giannis Antetokounmpo. Go ahead.
Hey, what's going on, guys? I'm not positive. I'm interpreting these right, but I did watch the game. I think I looked it up. Semi held Middleton and Giannis to like very low points. I'm just wondering if we're going to regret this Marcus Smart signing if Semi can do the same job and produce an offense.
Did you overrate the job that Semi Ojeleye did against Giannis the other night? I thought he was fine. Like, I don't know. Yeah. I know Gary Washburn had like a glowing article about the job that he did yesterday in the Globe. It's like, okay, like everybody pump the brakes here because there's really no answer for Antetokounmpo.
Yeah.
And the other thing I did like, because I like watching him play and I think he's one of the, you know, he's good for the league. Did you kind of notice he's getting superstar calls now too?
Oh, yeah, that's a good point. You're right. He is starting.
There was a few. It's like, oh, really? Like, okay. But okay. Like, I actually kind of think that's good. Yeah. It's like, okay, he's reached that level. He's getting some superstar calls now. There were some dubious calls for him the other night. But I don't know. It just the job Ojeleye did on him is like, is he the answer?
I mean, he's not the answer, but he does make him work. He makes him work for it, which, you know, I think which can help when it gets into the fourth quarter. Like, if you remember that sort of, you know, offhand reverse layup that Giannis missed. Which would have been
at the end
of the game. You know, again, maybe it's an exaggeration, a stretch to sort of, you know, give Shemmy a credit for that. But if you make the guy work and he gets to the end of the game and he's a little tired, he doesn't quite have the same lift and he misses a shot. That's all you can do against that guy is really make him work. They did it last year in the first round of the playoffs. I thought Ojeleye did a pretty good job on him. Look, I mean, it's kind of like the, you know, to a lesser degree, but, you know, the Joe Dumars, Michael Jordan thing. It's like, are you really stopping this guy or are you just making it really hard for him? You're harder for him than it normally is.
All right, 617-779-0985. If you want to join the show, we got open lines here with one more segment to go here on the Sports Hub Celtics show. And we'll tell you what's next for the season, touch on a couple other things going on throughout the league, like, well, it feels like it might be the end for Luke Walton as head coach of the L.A. Lakers. And you've been paying attention to what's going on with the Sacramento Kings, because right now...
No, oh, you're such a Kings believer.
The that pick don't look all that great. So we'll touch on that next. Sports Hub Celtic Show on 98.5 of Sports Hub.
This is the Sports Hub Celtic Show on the home of the seas. 98.5 the Sports Hub.
Oladipo on top, 4:38 to play. Oladipo bounces once, moving to his right and strokes a three. 21 points for Oladipo. The Pacers on a 7-point run have tied the game and prompted a Chicago timeout.
Sports Hub Celtic Show, 98.5 Sports Hub, Jim Murray, Chris Gasper. So what's next for the Celtics? The Indiana Pacers, who defeated the Chicago Bulls on the road last night, 107-105. Victor Oladipo finishing with 25 points, 14 rebounds. Darren Collison making a tie-breaking jumper with 17.8 seconds left to help the Pacers go to 6-3, 4-2 on the road. So obviously they're getting the second of a back-to-back as they welcome in the Celtics tonight. It'll be John Wallach and Cedric Maxwell on the call here on 98.5 of Sports Hub. Tip-off is in Wenmacombe, 7 o'clock tonight. Is that when this game is? Or is he can catch it here on, is it 98.5 of Sports Hub or 105.7 for this one tonight?
105.7, yep.
That's what I thought with the late Bruins start tonight in Nashville. This is another team that I kind of think could be a threat in the East. You know, going into the season, people were obviously still trying to make a case for the Wizards, who got booed off their home court last night.
They're 1-7. They're off to a terrible start.
I actually, there was nothing else really on last night. I was like, I'll watch this. It wasn't even a game. I mean, the second half was completely useless.
Well, you knew they weren't going to win that game. I mean, Dwight Howard was back. So
right.
It was like,
oh, God.
I mean, they were already struggling, and then they got Dwight Howard. I mean, that's terrible.
That's why I didn't take them seriously. They were already one of the bitchier locker rooms in the NBA, and then they had that turd. You reap what you sow there. But this Pacers team, and Oladipo, I think, is nasty. So, yeah. You know, I think it's a good matchup for them tonight. And yep. If you missed the last Sports Hub headlines with McCone, it sounds like Jalen Brown is going to play tonight. Adam Himmelsbach, Boston Globe, tweeting earlier today, Jalen Brown said he plans to play tonight. He's been dealing with this right foot soreness over the last week. It's also being called a plantar fascia injury. This is the same thing. Well, there's a plantar fascia injury for Daniel Tice, who unfortunately feels like he's somewhat made of glass, always feels like it's something with him. Should Brown push it tonight?
I don't think he should push it. I mean, just they're going on this, road trip here, this five-game road trip. I wouldn't mind seeing him miss this game and just come back on Monday against the Nuggets, who are also, a red-hot team right now in the NBA.
So that's what's going on there. Elsewhere throughout the league, it all feels like a matter of time with the Lakers. Magic Johnson apparently yelled at Luke Walton, the for now head coach of the LA Lakers, after their slow start out in LA. Ty yeah. Lue fired this week. Feels like it's all a matter of time before Ty Lue is the head coach of the LA Lakers to me.
Oh, that's a good point. I hadn't really put those two things together.
Oh, I thought I thought it was so obvious.
Oh, wow. That's a great point. Yeah. I mean, it makes sense. The relationship with LeBron is already there. Ty Lue played for the Lakers, obviously. Everybody remembers AI stepping over him in the 2001 NBA Finals. Yeah, I hadn't put those two things together, Jim, but it makes some sense. Obviously, there's a lot of pressure on Luke Walton to get it going with LeBron, but that's a weird mismatch of a roster they've given him. With young guys like Lonzo Ball and Brandon Ingram and Josh Hart and Kyle Kuzma, and then some like veteran guys where you're like, why is this guy on this team? Like Lance Stephenson. Like it feels like there's like the LeBron guys and then there's like the young guys, right?
Yeah.
Lance Stephenson, Rondo, like these are guys like LeBron was like, bring these guys in because they know how to play. And then they have like the young guys that are actually going to be good when the Lakers are at a situation where they can contend. And right now, Luke Walton's trying to balance that, and it's not going very well. But this is one of those patterns with LeBron, right? He gets to a new team and clashes with the coach. Now, normally, things can get turned around, although they didn't exactly get turned around with David Blatt. So who knows? Maybe Luke Walton's the David Blatt in the situation and not the Eric Spoelstra.
Certainly feels that way. And that's you're right, too, because they've obviously, with LeBron, been in prime time with these late games on TNT or NBA TV, and it's... The few times I've tuned in to watch them for a few minutes, like, oh, they have that bum, too? Like, there's so many.
Yeah, I mean, JaVale McGee's been really good for them, which is kind of surprising. I mean, that's one of those veteran guys they signed that's kind of weird, but he's been good. The other guys, it's kind of hard to figure out what their line – like, I saw a stat on ESPN that only the Hawks, I think, have used more lineup combinations so far than the Lakers. So Walton is trying to mix and match, and it's not going well, and LeBron's getting frustrated. Obviously, Magic is too.
And the other thing I wanted to touch on that I got mocked by you on Felger and Maz yesterday for is, if you haven't been paying attention, the Sacramento draft pick next year, for right now, feels like it's getting more worthless by the day. 6-3 record, road wins over the Heat and the Thunder. 5-game winning streak right now for Sacramento.
The Thunder are out of the playoffs right now. They've struggled. They've gotten off to a struggling start.
Still, I know it's been a rough start for them too. But
who else they've beaten is Washington, a team we just talked about that stinks.
Well,
look at their wins. They're actually not that impressive. Memphis will be in the lottery. That's another win for them.
De'Aaron Fox has looked pretty good. If you want to get into some stats, they're top half with defensive and offensive ratings.
Dave Yeager is a good coach, though.
It feels like Sacramento, at the very least, will you admit Sacramento's been better than we thought for the first couple of weeks of the season?
Yeah, sure. But, I mean, I'm just curious. That triple-double, who was that triple-double against?
The other night for Fox?
Yeah.
Who was it against?
Hawks, whoever, the worst team in the league. The tankerific Hawks. That was the triple-double.
My Hawks.
Yeah, I wasn't even going to say it. I'm not even focused on that. I'm focused on trying to prove the point that it's not time to panic yet about the Kings. It's early. It's very early. Right now, Houston, OKC, there's another team in the West. Are like out of the playoffs, and the Kings are in. Like, water finds its level.
B-Rob, any concern here with the Sacramento Kings in this pick? Do you think it's getting more worthless by the day, or is this just me being my big Jim Warriorist?
I would say this: the Orlando Magic started 6-3 last year, and we saw that turn out. But with that said,
fair point.
But Fox, Cauley Stein, hey, these guys are playing a little bit. So, I don't think you can lock it in as a bottom five pick. To your point, Jim, I think this is a situation where they could be you know, a middle-of-the-road lottery team, and that's, you know, obviously not good news for the season.
Well, I'll tell you what, Jim. You know, after this, I will see you next Friday, which is November the 9th. Will you be there in Felgren, Mass?
Yep.
Right? Okay, the next two games for the Kings are Sunday at Milwaukee and then Wednesday at Toronto. So let's revisit this next
All right.
Friday.
Yeah, though those are two tough matchups for them, so we'll talk about that again next Friday. And quickly, B-Rob, with Brown playing tonight against the Pacers, I would imagine it's limited minutes with this foot thing, but should he even be playing at all?
I would hold him out if this is a stuff that's a recurring issue. Like, I would just give him a few days here just to kind of nip in the bud. But I don't know if he's good to go. Then, you know, this is a team they obviously need him against, so I expect him to give it a try.
Well, Gordon Hayward says he needs some rest. So,
yeah.
All right. So again, it's Celtics and Indiana Pacers tonight as they start this road trip. It's John Wallach and Cedric Maxwell on the call. You can catch it on our sister station 105.7 WROR with a 7 o'clock tip off, and the Celtics pregame will begin at 6:30. And that will wrap up the Sports Hub Celtics show for today. If you missed any of it, you can catch it on the podcast on 98.5sportshub.com. We got an hour to go on Gasper Murray. It's going to be football heavy as we have the Battle of the 12s tomorrow. Tom Brady, Aaron Rodgers, Packers, Patriots at Gillette Stadium in prime time. We'll talk about that and what's going on with Rob Gronkowski next here on Gasper Murray.